Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated.
Well, one of the things that's beautiful about the Psalms is that you can just have someone like Trisha Schutzius read it, and it's a sermon in and of itself. It's just so beautiful. Well, good morning, everyone. Good to be with you, sort of. We were kind of hoping to not be here. We were hoping to have a baby, but we got to cut the baby some slack because tomorrow is technically the due date. But I will tell you in full sincerity, if we are here next Sunday, just don't talk to my wife. Just leave her alone. She may not be here. Well, we just finished our time going through the book of Jonah, which was just a pure delight, and we're kind of ramping up for Advent, which will start on December 1st, and most of what we're going to do in between Jonah and Advent is that we're going to do a collection of Psalms and Proverbs. Over the next few weeks, myself and then some other guest preachers are going to preach on a Psalm or Proverb of their choice as we kind of head into Advent. And today, I chose to preach on Psalm 139. And the reason for that is that this psalm has just popped up for me in a variety of contexts recently. But so much of why I wanted to preach on Psalm 139 is it feels like a psalm that could be written by Jonah. It feels like this is a perfect kind of cap to our study in the book of Jonah, right? There's so much that we saw in Jonah that we see King David write about here. Now, right off the gate, let me just say that Psalm 139 is often best known for being a psalm that people use for kind of a pro-life advocacy, right? Anti-abortion. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And I want to say that it is very good and valid for that purpose. But it's also a psalm that should lead us to have a soft heart, not just for the unborn baby, but for the immigrant, for the poor, for the homeless, the American, for the Russian, for the Ninevite, for the black, for the white, for the rich, for the poor. This is a passage that makes clear that every single human being who is made in the image of God, which is every single human being, is valued from creation to eternity. And so what we're going to see today in these few verses of Psalm 139 is that we belong to God. That's the main idea. We belong to God. It's a simple sentiment, but it's one that we really need to dig into to fully grasp. So we're going to look at it in three steps today. We belong to God first in that God is always with us. Secondly, that God created us. And third and finally, that God delights in us. So let's start with this idea that we belong to God in that God is always with us. We're going to start in the very first verse, in verse 11. And the psalmist writes, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there." Now, what we'll see over the next few verses is that the psalmist is going to use this kind of literary device of kind of contrasting two places or two states and saying, okay, you're here, but you're also here. You're there, but you're also there. And the first one that he brings up here is he says, if I go to the heavens, you are there. And that is maybe the most boring sentiment that he gives because it's the most obvious. If I go to the heavens, God better be there, right? That is God's home. It is his dwelling place of glory and righteousness. But that's not really the surprising part here. It's the contrast. You're there, oh, but also if I make my bed in the depths, you're even there. And it's surprising because I think the NIV does this word a little bit of an injustice when it translates it as depths. More literally, in the Hebrew, the word that is there is the word Sheol. Sheol. And if you're familiar with the word Sheol, it's kind of an important Old Testament Hebrew word. And Sheol was literally the place of the dead. When you die, you go to Sheol. You could sort of say that it's the Old Testament version of hell, but more importantly, it is the place where you go when you die. It is the place of death, destruction, the end of life. And so when we understand that this is not just depths, but it's Sheol, that's where this becomes really surprising. Why? Because God belongs in the heavenly realms. He should be in the heavenly realms. But the psalmist says, you even leave the glory of the heavenly realms and you enter into the darkness, the devastation, the evil, the death of Sheol. You're even there. Now, as a pastor, I want to tell you that one of my pet peeves is that if we go out for a cup of coffee, a beer, for lunch, and we're talking, and you let a naughty word fly, right? Shoot, frick, if you catch my drift, right? You let that naughty word accidentally seep out, and you go, oh, no, I'm so sorry, Pastor. And the reason that it kind of bothers me is it almost makes this divide, right? Like you say that, but I don't say that. Or maybe like I'm the pastor, so my ears are just, they're too precious, right? I'm too pure. Oh, those naughty words, no. But I think a lot of times that can be how we view God. God is the God of the heavenly realms. He's the God of righteousness, the God of purity. He hates sin, death, and evil. And so he's kind of afraid of it. It's kind of like icky. Like God just doesn't, he's got his kind of hands just kept clean of all of that. And there's some truth to that in that God belongs in the heavenly realms where there's no sin, evil, and death. That is where God should be. And yet our God is a God who is willing to go into Sheol, to go into the muck and mire, to dive into darkness and death. Our God leaves the heavenly realms to enter into the darkness of Sheol for you and for me. The psalmist finds him there. But secondly, in verse 9, the psalmist goes on to say, if I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. So the idea of Sheol, it's almost like a state of death. But here we see more of a true place, a location. The psalmist is imagining some location that is far, far, far away, like unseeable. He's never been there. His friends have never been there. It's the farthest away place they can imagine, but all they've ever heard is just people chatting about it, but no one's ever actually been there. And the idea is that the psalmist gets in his boat and he travels all the way to this farthest place, and when he gets there, God's already there waiting for him. Welcome ashore. I love this because this is literally what we saw in the book of Jonah. This is just the psalm version of what Jonah did, right? Jonah wanted to escape the presence of God, and he gets in a boat, and he says, what's the farthest place I can imagine? Oh, Tarshish, at the end of the Mediterranean Sea, right? And he goes sailing, trying to get away from God, but he can't. God finds him. God brings him back. What we see here in verses 9 and 10 is known by the fancy theological term God's omnipresence. The fact that God is literally everywhere. You are not omnipresent. I am up here, which means I am not down there. I am up here, which means that I am not outside. But God is here, there, everywhere. God is currently in America. God is currently in Australia. God is currently in Antarctica. God is in Mars. God is at Mercury. God's presence spills over the entire face of the world. You cannot hide from God. But the last place that the psalmist brings up is maybe the best of all. In verse 11, the psalmist says, "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." Now again, I think the NIV here, it's a little misleading, because the way that this is written is it almost sounds like the psalmist wants to hide. It sounds like the psalmist is going to do something naughty, something sinful. So he's like, let me kind of creep and hide in the darkness to do my dirty deeds. But more accurately, this idea of darkness here, it doesn't mean hiding to do something sinful. It means lostness. It means being a person that doesn't know which way to go, a person that is in chaos and uncertainty. The word here translated hide more literally means to be overwhelmed, to be overwhelmed with darkness. Like a thick blanket has been thrown over you and you do not know which way to go. You do not know what state you are in. In high school, we did a field trip once to a deep, deep cavern, and I actually don't remember where it was. I don't remember anything about it, but the one thing I remember is that the guide led us deep, deep down into the cavern, and then he said, "Okay, get ready. I'm going to turn off all of the lights," and he shut off all of the lights, and it was the darkest dark that I had ever seen in my life, like dark that you cannot see the hand that's in front of you. And so in that moment, you're like, I remember coming down. I think I've got a sense of the way out. Maybe I could feel around for a rope, but it is dark. I am lost. I am helpless unless this guy turns the lights back on. Sometimes we know we're in darkness, like that situation. We know that we have stepped off the path, that we are lost, that we need help. And the psalmist says that in those moments where we're lost, unsure, and scared, God knows that we're scared. He knows where we are. He sees us, and he is with us and capable to lead us out. But maybe more significantly, this also means that God is with us when we're in the darkness and don't know that we're in the darkness. When we don't realize that we're lost, that we don't realize that we think we know the way, but actually we don't know the way. Even in those moments, God knows and he sees and he is with us. One of my favorite song lyrics ever goes like this: "Though I'd lived, I'd never been alive, but you know who I am. You held my hem as I traveled blind." That image of "you held my hem as I traveled blind." Whether I knowingly went into the darkness or unknowingly was in the darkness, that whole time, God, you had your hand on my shirt. You knew where I was. So the psalmist says that we belong to God and that God is always with us in every place, state, location, no matter what. He is holding our hem and he will not let us go. But the second major point is that we belong to God because God created us. So let's look at verse 13. The psalmist says, "You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." It's very, very clear that Psalm 139 is in no way saying we're here by chance. This kind of happened to going to be molecules that came together, and here we are. It says God made us, but it doesn't just say God made us. It says God made us intentionally. He made us with intentionality. The psalmist does not say that God printed me like a 3D printer. You know, click a button, brr, there's Matt Graham. "No, he knit me together in my mother's womb." If you're knitting, you have a plan. You've got specific yarn and tools that you're using. It takes time and effort, and each step is thought through. Attention is paid. The psalmist goes on to say, "Not only did you knit me together in my mother's womb, but I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." These two words together mean glory and uniqueness. They mean that we are intricate. We are strange. We are crazy creatures that God has made. And we're also special, different from one another. As I've mentioned prior, as you guys know, we have a baby that is soon on the way. And it's just wild that as you get ultrasounds and sonograms and all these things, right, that baby from such early on, he's got fingers, he's got toes. From so early on, his heart is beating, his brain is formed, and he might just be the size of my fist at that moment. God truly knits us together in these intricate, amazing ways. Babies are so fragile, and yet they're also so safe in their mother's womb. And also, when they come out, that baby is different from every other baby that has ever existed. That baby has a name that these other babies don't have and a temperament that they do not have. The psalmist goes on in verse 15 to say, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body." So God made us intentionally, but also God made us intimately. Intentionally, in my mind, is like it's focus, it's brain power, it's ability. God is thinking of what to do. But intimate means that when God makes us, it involves his heart. His affections are present. It is intimate and it is personal, what he's doing. I love the way that Tricia kind of leaned into that phrase, secret place. You made me in your secret place. You were woven together in the depths of the earth. Scholars kind of disagree on what this terminology of depths of the earth means. Some people say, well, it's just continuing the idea from before. It's a metaphor for a mother's womb, you know, the depths of the earth in a mother's womb. Some scholars say, well, it's referring to Genesis 2, when God made Adam out of the depths of the dust of the earth. But regardless of what it means, the poetic sentiment is that it is mysterious and it is intimate. It is a spot that only God knows. As a kid, you may have grown up with some sort of a secret place, right? A place in your home that people did not frequently go to, a place outside, a place in the woods, your secret place to go hide, go play, go imagine, go be alone. And maybe, just maybe, if you had a friend, a cousin, a brother or sister who you were close enough with, maybe you would show them that secret place. Maybe you would say, this is my special spot. That is how God has made us. He welcomed our soul into this secret place, and he knit us together in our mother's womb. Now let's continue verse 16 here at the end here. God says, or David says, "All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." This is my favorite. God has made us intentionally. God has made us intimately. But God has made us with identity. Identity. God did not intimately knit us together in our mother's womb, and then we were born, and then he said, "Okay, good luck. You're a blank slate. Go be, do whatever you want. You know, it's up to you. I have no thoughts on the matter." No, God knit us together to be a specific person, to have a specific identity with specific plans and purposes. He knew what our days would entail and what we would contribute to his kingdom. This point matters so, so much because it means that every single human being has significance. Every single human being is destined for meaningfulness. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be president or CEO, but it means that God has a purpose for your life. Maybe a year or two ago, we were traveling and we were back in Indiana. We were back in Fort Wayne, where we're from. And I remember very clearly that there were a couple of billboards around town that said, like, "You matter," or they said, "You are enough," one of the two. And there was nothing else on the billboard, right? There was no, like, "paid for by so-and-so." It was just a big sign that said in two colors, "You are enough, you matter." And I just thought that was really interesting. It caught my eye, and I was thinking, why is that there? And the conclusion I came to is, oh, because we need to hear it in our society. Because we live in a society where depression and suicide are on the rise. In young men roughly my age, suicide is the second leading cause of death. And I actually heard recently that it might be the first now, but it's up there. And all across the board, across different age groups, different demographics, thousands upon thousands of suicides, not to mention depression, anxiety, whatever. Every single human being needs to know that they matter. They matter, that they're significant, that their life is worthwhile. And a billboard, it's a good start. It's helpful. But even that, at some point, someone who is deep and down in the depths, they're going to look at that billboard and say, but why? Who says? What authority does the billboard have? And here we have Psalm 139 confirming that same truth that the billboard says, but it's uttered from the mouth of God, the creator of the entire universe, the only person whose judgment ultimately matters. He says, you matter. I don't care how broken, how depraved you are, how far you've gotten from me. I have made you with an identity, a plan, and a purpose. You are enough. You are significant. You have identity in me through my fingerprints on your DNA. So far we have seen that we belong to God and that God will not leave us alone. He's always with us. That God made us with intentionality, intimacy, and with a sense of identity. But we're going to conclude here by looking at God's kind of heart, that God delights in us. So we're going to close out our section by reading verses 17 through 18. The psalmist says, how precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Now, again, I love the NIV. I feel like I'm ragging on the NIV today, but that first section, how precious to me are your thoughts, God, that can actually be translated in one of two ways. If you read different translations, maybe even if you have one here, it might say something different. But I think the more accurate translation is found in the NASB translation, which is the more literal translation. And there it says, how precious also are your thoughts for me, God. Not just generally how precious are your thoughts, but God, we just talked about your intimacy. How amazing are your thoughts for me? How vast are the sum of them? The psalmist has spent his time talking about the power in the hands of God to form and shape. But now the psalmist is just marveling, just worshiping. He's just setting back and just saying, Lord, your deep care and concern for me, it's unfathomable. Our God is all powerful. He is all righteous. He is holy. He is mysterious. He is transcendent. He is omnipresent, omniscient. And he's a little busy running the universe. And so it would make sense that we may say, okay, God made me, but he does not have time for me. He does not see me. There are wars, there are famines. He does not see me. Or maybe you think, okay, God sees me, but that's the problem. Because I've done things that I'm not proud of. I've run from him. And so knowing that he can see me is terrifying because I imagine him as being endlessly upset, angry, frustrated. I made you and this is what you do? But no, the psalmist says that God is thinking of him endlessly, as much as grains of sand on the beach. I think in my own life of myself as a father, trying to raise my two kids, eventually three kids. And even over the last month or so, I just think about my own interactions with my kids. And there are a vast amount of them that I am very unsatisfied with, where I feel like I dropped the ball, moments where I lost my temper, moments where I disciplined too quickly, too harshly, moments where I was dismissive, moments where I did not listen, moments where I just checked out of my responsibility as a dad. Moments that I wish I could take back. But as I look back on that last month, right, and my bad moments, maybe moments where kids felt like they weren't appreciated or seen, even I can look back on that last month and know that scattered all in the midst of all of those bad things are my thoughts for my kids, like grains on the beach. Even if they look at me and see anger, frustration, disappointment, what they don't know is that in my heart, in my mind, I am thinking of them endlessly. I am talking about them endlessly. I am looking at pictures of them endlessly, like grains of sand filling in all the cracks of those bad moments. And that's me in my sin, in my fallen nature. And if that's true for me, then how much more is it true for our perfect heavenly Father? Great, great question from Bob Thune, pastor who writes the book Gospel-Centered Life. He says, as God thinks of you right now, What is the look on his face? Genuine question for you. Do you picture God as disappointed, angry, indifferent? Does his face say, get your act together, or if only you could do a little more for me? Genuinely answer that question in your heart. What is God's face, just day to day, when you think of him imagining you? Pastor Thune goes on to say, if you imagined God as anything but satisfied because of what Jesus has done for you, you have fallen into a performance mindset. Because the gospel truth is that in Christ, God is deeply satisfied with you. That God thinks of you like grains of sand on a seashore, and it's satisfaction, it's delight. This is my son, this is my daughter with whom I am well pleased. What Thune is saying, building on what we've already said, is that God has made us. God is endlessly with us, and every grain of thought that fills his head for us is filled with delight and satisfaction and love. And there are moments where even the most mature Christian will doubt that. There are moments where we will say, well, yeah, but I did this, or whatever it may be. And in those moments, we can open our Bibles and we can see that it says he loves us. And in those moments, we can take him at his word, but maybe we have a hard time taking him at his word. Well, luckily, God asks us not just to take it at his word, but he also demonstrates it to us in the person of Jesus Christ. The Son of God comes into our world. He takes on flesh. He becomes human like us. And he makes God's love and delight abundantly clear. Jesus enters into our darkness. He enters into our Sheol. He enters into our death and our destruction and our sin and our burdens and our sadness. And he pursues us. And he purchases us. He goes to Tarshish and says, no, come on, come back. Jesus is so close to us that he's taken on our flesh. He's taken on our sin. He's taken on our baggage. He's taken on our punishment. He has gone to the cross and died in our place. He has taken our guilt and sin, and he's removed them from us. And now, in Jesus' blood, we are marked, we are confirmed, we are assured of the fact that forever we are God's beloved sons and daughters. By his blood, that is the thing that we look at and say, yes, by his blood, by this table, I know that my God is not just God in quotation marks. Our God is God the Father. Our God is Abba Father. Our God is Daddy. As Song of Songs chapter 6 says, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. In other words, I belong to the God of the universe, and that God belongs to me through the work of Jesus Christ. And so when you feel far from God, whether in your mental, emotional state or in location, trust that God is endlessly holding your hem in the darkness. When you feel a sense of purposelessness, worthlessness, loss of identity, remember that God has knit you together in your mother's womb. He's marked out your days with a plan and a purpose. And when you feel like God merely tolerates you like a frustrated father, know that his thoughts are endless, like grains of sand on a beach, that he delights in you. Let us worship and celebrate the fact that through the work of Jesus Christ, we belong to God the Father, we belong to God the Son, we belong to God the Spirit, past, present, and future, and for all of eternity. Let's pray.